Well, first, I just want to say what a pleasure it is to address all of you. I was honored to be asked to present, and then slightly worried when I saw that I was the very last person on the very last panel. And so I need to say how grateful I am that there are actually so many people still in the room right now. What I want to talk to you about today is what I think we need to think about as far as achieving wide-scale change at the state level in support of federalism and in support of freedom. So my remarks are really divided into two different categories. One, about the method I think we should use, and then two, with the messages I think we should use. And this is really an approach we're taking when it comes to Medicaid reform. So this is also a project that we're doing. I also have a little video that I'll show you in the middle of my talk, assuming everything goes well here on the laptop. When you think about the Philadelphia Society, their model of connecting like-minded leaders and uniting them or unifying them behind first principles and core concepts, that approach in our federalist system is really critical. And I think that that united front approach is critical to advancing freedom across America. Again, too often I think those of us on the right, conservatives, libertarians, whomever, highlight the sovereignty and the creativity of individual states, but we don't leverage the federalism model to achieve rapid, wide-scale change. Often we as free market leaders don't internalize that victory does not end when an isolated reform passes in one state. And I think to grow our movement and to achieve wide-scale change, we need to look at a different approach when it comes to advancing federalism, and an approach that I think is much more exciting to action-oriented young people. In a phrase, I think we need to use the franchising power inherent in the federalist system to advance freedom. Think federalism can be about franchising freedom fast. And this is not a new concept. In fact, those on the left have used this approach for years in pursuit of bigger government and greater control over our finances and our lives. Think about environmental regulations, tobacco tax increases, public funding of campaigns, government-run health care. The left advanced these schemes in a few specific states, and then after they won, they took them on the road. And they pushed them in multiple states at the same time and achieved a wide-scale victory. And what transpired was this domino effect of big government policies with state after state falling until finally federal policy was toppled as well. The left understood that to solidify these big government schemes in the initial states and to achieve greater control over the lives of all of us, they needed a simultaneous multi-state strategy. Because a single reform in one state, as we just heard about in Massachusetts, is weak. But a reform in many states is strong and less vulnerable to appeal. The left figured it out. So what does this mean for those of us on the right? How do we counter the agenda of the left and advance our own agenda? I think what we do is we use their own strategy against them. Think of it like free market judo. We use their power against them. We must take what's working well in one state and have a strategy to replicate that in several states at the same time in a short period of time. If you think about not just on the left, but also special interests and corporations, this is exactly what they do. They have their national agenda, they have their federal and state-based lobbyists, and they work on the same set of issues on multiple fronts all at the same time, and I think none of us in this room would argue that special interests have not been extremely effective over the last several decades. I can really only think of one compelling example of this on our side, and that's the school choice movement. All of us believe that a student's zip code should not dictate the quality of their education, because we believe that students and parents should have the right to choose the best school possible with the best education so that every student has the hope of economic freedom through education. But it took an aggressive multi-state strategy to accomplish that. The very first charter school was established 20 years ago in Minnesota, and today 41 states have over 5,600 charter schools educating 2 million students. And that's because of the dedication of a combination of national advocates and state leaders who encouraged this multi-state student-centered school choice movement. So this is what my think tank, which is based in Naples, Florida, is doing when it comes to Medicaid reform. We're taking this kind of same approach with a five-step strategy to enact free market Medicaid reform in 10 states over the next 3 years. And those five steps, which I won't go into, are providing a toolkit for action, giving them messages that win, providing fly-in reinforcement and peer support from their counterparts who have figured it out, helping elected officials look good while doing good, and providing deep technical support. So let me just talk to you a little bit about now the message, because I think that too often those of us on the right don't use effective messages when it comes to advancing a particular policy solution. So what I want to show you now is a video of a Medicaid patient. Back in 2006, then-Governor Jeb Bush enacted patient-centered Medicaid reform in Florida in a pilot region. And this patient-centered Medicaid reform took Medicaid from this one-size-fits-none monolithic government program to one where the individual was treated with dignity and empowered with the choice of lots of different private plans, including plans that were specialized for the unique health conditions that are inherent in the diverse and complicated Medicaid population. This video highlights one such patient, Alan Sanchez. He and his family live right outside of Fort Lauderdale. Just give me a second to connect the wire. Okay, wait just a second. This is that pregnant pause where I build up intentionally anticipation in your mind. Can you hear that okay?
Wouldn't have been part of the Medicaid reform plan, Alan wouldn't have been able to get all the help that he's getting right now. This is Alan when they were born. He was hooked to a ventilator, and this was Anthony on the incubator. They were in the ICU for a month. Even the premature diapers were big on them. They came home when they were 4 pounds. They're miracle babies. One of the twins, his name is Alan. He has a lot of health problems. He has a tumor on the pituitary gland, and it affects the front lobe of his brain. He has heart problems. He's due for a catheterization in 2 weeks. He has a growth problem due to the tumor. Growth problem is affecting his right leg. He's growing more on the right side than on the left, so he's getting a small surgery for that. Alan was about 11 years old when we found out that he had the pituitary tumor. The Medicaid reform has been a really good experience. It's been a great help to me. Kathy's been a very important part of my family because she has always been there to help me.
With Alan, because he has numerous problems, trying to navigate his appointments and helping mom navigate those appointments is important because he does follow up with an endocrinologist, a cardiologist, an ophthalmologist, psychologist, just to name a few. Working as a case manager, you're working one-on-one with that patient, so you're building up a relationship with them. You're just as important to them as the doctor is.
I think now that we see the care is being better coordinated, oftentimes we see that specialists and other providers are actually more willing to see patients versus old Medicaid. Though one thing that I think people should know about Medicaid reform as compared to old Medicaid is I think it's a step in the right direction of having patients and physicians working together. It truly does prevent a lot of unnecessary, uncoordinated care. As part of Medicaid reform, I think we definitely do see a benefit to the practice in that patients are coming in more regularly to be seen for their visits. They're getting their visits on time. We actually spend less administrative time trying to contact patients, reach them, do callbacks, reinforce the care that's being provided.
What I really want is for them to grow as healthy as, you know, normal kids. I want them to be able to have good health and be able to go to school, start their own families, and be successful.
I want to be a violinist. And my hobby is a skateboarder and a musician.
It was an incredible honor for me to have the privilege of interviewing Lorenny and Alan and their entire family. And I think that you can agree that their family has suffered loss and health challenges that most of us can't even imagine. I know I can relate. My wife and I have twin sons, Jude and Asher, who were born very premature, and our son Jude developed a brain infection and almost died at 3.5 months. But thanks to quality care, Jude and all of our kids have the hope of a bright future. And that's what free market Medicaid reform can achieve for Alan, can achieve for low-income people, give them the hope of a better life because it moves them from sickness to health, from poverty and dependency to self-sufficiency, and gives them the opportunity of a better life and to move off government health care and on to private insurance. I think too often we begin with a fiscal message on almost every issue, when we have the ability to seize the moral high ground and do what's right for people who are poor and sick. A broken Medicaid system hurts kids, it hurts parents, and it hurts taxpayers. And this reform, as is true with education reform, is about helping those people that the program was supposed to help to begin with, the patients. And when we go out and talk to lawmakers, we don't lead with, this program is actually one of the least expensive Medicaid programs in the country that has better health outcomes and higher levels of patient satisfaction than other Medicaid programs, and on the satisfaction level is higher than even commercial insurance. We don't talk about the billions that our state will save when this reform goes statewide. Our approach is to talk about how the reform is entirely patient-centered. And I think it's so important on our end that we focus a little bit less on expanding the Overton window, and we focus a little more about not leaving policy reform up to the political class, and that we seize the moral high ground with a message that talks about how we can move individuals from sickness to health and on to a better life. Because that's what the reforms have to do. It has to work for patients, and it has to work for taxpayers. And frankly, when you talk to young people or anyone else, that's what they want to do. They want to accomplish what the safety net was supposed to do to begin with, whether it's welfare moving from dependency to independence, whether it's education to move to economic freedom through education, or whether it's a healthcare safety net to move on to a better life. So I think we need to look at a method and a message that wins by copying those kind of strategies. And we can talk more if you're interested in Q&A. Thank you.